All right, good morning. Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. I will go ahead and call us to order. And could we have the roll call, please?
Faye Gallant. Nate Bauer.
Present.
Evelyn Pinsgaard. Chad Olson. Leslie Walls. Jamie Warwick.
Here.
Jesse Atencio. Sue Mitchell.
Here.
Wendy Rube. Thanks, Wendy. Chris Brooks.
I don't see Chris.
Jim Grosslows.
Here.
Matthew Mund.
Here.
Suzy Fry.
Could somebody let her in?
No. Deborah. Okay. Stacey Howdeshell. Brandy Marrero.
Here.
Katie Miller.
Here.
Jessica Armstrong.
Here.
Emily Nelson.
Here.
Kara Axe.
Here.
Dina Jala. And I've got Chris Perkowski, proxy for Jessica. Jessica Allard,
present.
Kimberly Knutson.
Here.
Brad Crick, and I think he's up there.
Here.
Thanks, Brad. Lena Krutikoff. Janelle Merrifield. Phil Jacobs.
Here.
Christina Thompson.
Cool.
Amanda Wall.
Here.
Melissa Parks. Okay. Thanks, Melissa. Connie Heisinger. Samara Tabor.
Here.
Anybody whose name I did not call.
Thank you, guys. And if anyone in the room hasn't had a chance yet, there's coffee, tea, water, and cookies that were actually provided for us personally by the chancellor for our meeting today.
Aww.
Yeah, we can tell him thank you when he comes by later. That was very nice. Next up, approval of today's agenda. For staff council meeting 271.
Okay, can you move the microphone closer?
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Approval of the agenda for today. Do you have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second? Second. Great. I have one addition, which is under new business, item 8. So it's an H under new business, and it's an item that I'd like to talk about, maybe the University Advocacy Committee taking on a report on employee giving and volunteerism. But we can talk about that more under new business. Do I need a motion to approve that change? Do I have a motion to approve that change? There was a motion to approve the agenda. I move to amend. So I guess I move to amend. So then I just need
the general consensus.
Okay. Is there consensus with that amendment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so any opposition to approving the amended agenda? Okay, any other additions? All right, hearing none, we have an agenda. Is there a motion to approve the minutes for meeting 269?
So moved.
Thank you. For the second?
Second.
Thanks. All right. Any edits? All right. Anyone opposed to approving the minutes? Great. All right. Minutes are approved. Green dot minute. I think probably everyone has seen this by now, but there was a public report on the administrative response to the UAF Title IX issues. That is attached. As well as messages from both President Johnson and Interim Chancellor Powers on that report. It seemed to me to basically just support what we'd sort of already heard and already knew, but I don't know if anyone wants to discuss any of the findings there or comment on them. There is an interesting editorial or letter to the editor as well in the Newsminer last week by Dr. Sina Anahita from the Sociology Department, saying that she thought it scapegoated a bit and didn't reflect the full scope of responsibility that should be borne for the failures. But at any rate, that's out there, and I think that'll inform the responses and procedures going forward. All right, status of pending actions. The staff council resolution about the review of layoff or recall decision is with Staff Alliance, so I'll move to push that along at our next Staff Alliance meeting. And our resolution in support of ASUAF's position on SB 208 that passed and was shared with ASUAF. The bill itself is dead, basically. It came off the table pretty much the same day that we passed our resolution, so I haven't shared it with the legislature because they decided that they weren't interested in pursuing it. But we did share it with ASUAF so that they had it available. And there's a record of our support for their position. All right. Any comments or questions on either of those two items? All right. Is there anyone for public comment? Jamie, did you have public comment?
I do. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. There's a microphone. I just wanted to let everybody know, in case you haven't seen it in the cornerstone, that the registration is open now for Staff Recognition and Development Day, which is being held on Thursday, May 12th from 9 to 4:30. And there are a lot of personal and professional development sessions that people can sign up for. There's lunch, there's a health fair. And we really want to get the word out to those that may not have seen the announcement in the cornerstone, so I'm hoping that the Staff Council reps will send this out to their units and encourage people to sign up for this opportunity.
Thanks, Janie.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Any questions about Staff Development Day? All right. Officers' report. All right, I've got several notes here. A few things. It seems like currently the Guns on Campus bill is stalled. The last I heard, though, it wasn't clear whether it was stalled and just going to stay stalled or whether it was stalled so that it could be used sort of at the 11th hour in negotiations to get get things.
There's whatever noise is right behind me. It's hard for me to hear you.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
So the guns on campus bill, SB 174, has been stalled. It hasn't been moving. And so it's not quite clear right now whether it's stalled for good and is not going to move, or whether it's stalled so that it can be used sort of late in the negotiations as they're trying to close out things in the House to basically as a bargaining chip. So it's not moving right now. That doesn't mean that it is dead for good. Then a couple things on safety as well. There was the boiler explosion at the power plant. If anyone didn't hear about that, it basically was this water dripped down and into this super hot boiler, expanded into steam, and blew the door off the boiler, and then shot the super hot steam out onto the floor. And very luckily, no one was injured, but it was probably a closer call than anyone would have liked. So they're looking at ways to make that safer, maybe ways to set it up so it would, if something happened again, it would vent up as opposed to out on the floor where people are working. But until we get the new power plant online, there's potential that this would happen again. But kudos to facilities, because we were back online and something like 90 minutes after the explosion. So really great work there. Could someone get the door? Sorry. Additionally, on safety, there was the bathroom in the Bunnell building that if some people had heard, I don't know that it was communicated broadly across campus. It had basically been accessed by a setup for a peeping Tom, basically, in one of the women's bathrooms. So facilities has been going around to every bathroom on campus and at our rural sites as well to make sure that there were no other bathrooms where this was happening. They found two other places where it would be possible to view, but it didn't look like it had been intentionally tampered with. So they've been going through and fixing any place where that might happen. And so they've finished the main campus and the ones in Fairbanks, and I think there's just a couple rural sites that they were still working their way through as of last week. We also had a request from Gary Burrell that if there are places on campus that you think could use some extra maintenance in the coming year, if things are starting to look sort of run down or shabby and you just feel like no one's noticing or acting on it, she's trying to put together sort of a top five priorities list and welcomes input. So if you have things, just go ahead and send them to me and I'll share them with Kari. But she's just trying to take advantage of all the eyes we have out on campus, because there's a lot of places that she doesn't personally spend much time in and see. Let me see. There's also, and Nicole just sent it out via email, at the end of the week, last week, HR sent out a memo to deans and directors that had just some information about resources to support employees, since things are hard for everyone right now in terms of uncertainty, in terms of workloads. So it had information on how to contact your human resources consultants as well as the employee assistance program, and then made some suggestions for ways to minimize impacts to employees. And Brad's words to me on it were, it's not perfect, but it's something, and right now we need something. So, if you have other suggestions, if we have other suggestions, we can, share those with HR as well. But it was, I thought, nice that they recognized sort of the stresses people are under and are trying to proactively get some resources out to people. And I think everything else that I would report on is covered under unfinished business and new business. So, Nate, do you mind? I think we have someone came for public comment. If we just do that.
I will wait.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Jeannie. Sure. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, it works.
I really appreciate you taking, you allowing me to take a few minutes of your time to talk about a real important award that is given by the Board of Regents every year. My name is Jeannie Phillips. I'm a special assistant to the Chancellor, and I've worked at the, I'm an alum, and I've worked at the university since 1981. There are two awards that are given each year by the Board of Regents. The first is honorary degree, and that's given for someone who is is nominated by a faculty search committee and is known for their expertise in a discipline. It doesn't have to be in Alaska. It could be nationwide. It could be in the Arctic. It could be anywhere, but just in a discipline. The other one that they give is the Meritorious Service Award, and that's the one I'd like to speak to you real briefly about this morning. When the university was divided so that all of the community campuses, back then community colleges, under separate accreditation, there was a recognition that honorary degrees weren't being given to any of those community college citizens throughout the state. So the Board of Regents created the Meritorious Service Award. If you haven't heard about it, it's because it's really unique to the University of Alaska. No other institution that I'm aware of has this award. And what it does is it recognizes outstanding community leaders for their service to their community. And so at when the universities combined in 1987, before then, the Meritorious Service Award came up through the advisory council at those community colleges. And that kind of went away when the community colleges were absorbed into the universities. And in fact, Meritorious Service Awardees came out of that same faculty committee that appointed the honorary degrees. So if you look at a master list, you see a huge drop in the amount of Meritorious Service Awards that were granted by any of the campuses throughout the system. About 6 years ago, the Board of Regents said, we need to do Meritorious Service Awards a little bit differently, separated them a little bit more firmly in board policy and regulation where they are enshrined, and suggested to the campuses that the appointment or the nomination for these individuals be separated. So UAS did that about 5 years ago, and I am, for the Chancellor, I facilitate that process for UAS now. 2 years ago, Glenn Hackney and Bill Mendenhall were the awardees for Meritorious Service Award. I think everybody knows Glenn Hackney, the trash guy, the guy who picks up our trash that works at the food bank. Last year, Karen Parr, who was instrumental in Raven Landing, and Tony Gasparo, who was not only an alumnus here, or a retiree here, but also a huge amount of work with the Peace Corps, received it. And so those are the type of individuals that we're looking for and we know are in our community. I've also asked Pete Penny and Yvonne Peter to really reach out to Kuskokwim campus, Northwest campus, you know, are extended, and get those advisory councils reinvigorated into, there are very worthy individuals in those campuses, and we just don't see those nominations anymore. So they're going to be working on that. But you, as Faye just said, you're the eyes not only on campus, you're the eyes in the community because you are part of the community. So we really want to get the word out that we want nominations for these individuals. So if you are would go out on uaf.edu/chancellor, there is, in that pull-down menu for the Chancellor's site, there is a Meritorious Service Award site. It tells you who has received it in the past, what criteria are required for it, the timeline, and then there's a fill-in form. So it's very easy to nominate someone in that. We do request a couple letters of, along with the nomination or the nominator information, that there's also a couple letters of reference. Because this then goes to the Chancellor, then it goes to the President, and then it goes to the Board of Regents for approval or disapproval at their September board meeting, we do try and keep it as confidential as possible, because you don't want to nominate someone, get all the information from them and their family, and then for some reason have it not approved at the board level. So we really try and keep these very, very quiet. This year's two nominees, awardees that will be getting their Meritorious Service Awards next week at commencement are Gary Wilkin and Carolyn Wallace. Keeping them from knowing about these was a Herculean effort, I can assure you. But once the board approves them, then we send the letter out immediately saying, you have been approved, will you accept? And then we can go from there. So we do, if you do nominate someone, we do request, try and keep it on the QT just in case something happens along in the process and they're not approved, because that would be kind of devastating. So if you have any questions about the Meritorious Service Award, again, I'm in the Chancellor's office, 7765. And I just really appreciate you giving me the time to promote this award and really be thinking about people in our community that would be worthy. So thank you very much.
And thank you, Jeannie. We have the link to that page on the agenda under New Business Item G. So the link is directly there if you guys want it. I'll just take this chance too to thank Jeannie for her really incredible service to the university. She's done an amazing work with some of the stuff around Centennial right now as well, and she's a real treasure to you. So I'm glad everyone got to meet Jeannie today.
If you have any memorabilia about, next year's our centennial, just let me pitch it. And I am helping in the Chancellor's office with the centennial celebration, 100 years, 2017. So if you have any memorabilia in your basement or in your attic or, your grandma has it or you see it at a garage sale, grab it. We're just trying to gather all of that history that we have such a rich history at the university, and we're trying to gather that. So you can call me on that, too. That'd be wonderful. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeannie. All right, Nate.
Thank you. So I just have a couple things to say. I'll say a few words about the Planning and Budget Committee. We wrapped up our work on the PBC a couple weeks ago. The subcommittees, which I think I talked about at last month's meeting, completed our sort of short-term schedule and relayed our recommendations back to a larger committee. I would say that it went. I think by the end of our schedule, it had gone a little bit differently than we had expected at the beginning, and most of that was because the cuts just sort of started to feel like they were going deeper and deeper. Initially the vice chancellors had offered $26 million reduction proposals. They were then subsequently asked to provide $36 million reduction proposals. With both of those, I think the assumption was that the cuts would not actually be to those deep levels, and there would be some kind of marginal space that the Planning and Budget Committee and then the subcommittees could work with to determine, to prioritize which cuts to use and which to leave alone. Of course, by the end of the Planning and Budget Committee's work, it actually looked like the $36 million cuts were going to be maxed out. So the subcommittees had very little, in most cases, had very little work to do other than to endorse or to red flag any of the suggestions that were made by the vice chancellors. Of course, if you red flag something as a cut that you don't think should move forward, then that money has to be found someplace else. In most cases, that means a horizontal cut across the whole VC portion or component of the university. So I think subcommittees were reluctant to make very many alternative suggestions. With maybe the noted exception of the provost subcommittee, I think that they were a little bit more robust and complex in their response. They came up with some alternatives, and there was some lively discussion about whether those were valid or not. But suffice it to say that the recommendations on the part of the endorsements and recommendations on the part of the Planning and Budget Committee are now going back to the Chancellor and his cabinet for decisions, final decisions. It would surprise me if there were significant differences between the Vice Chancellor proposals and what the final decisions are for reductions, but we will see. And you know, just as a final note, I would say I'll give a shout out to Trish Winters, who was the alternate on the PVC. She did a fantastic job as an alternate. I think that with the two of us, in addition to Jenny Campbell, also from facilities, the staff was represented well. We had a strong voice in the discussions, in the meetings. I think that we represented ourselves well and had a, you know, as much of an impact on the conversation as I think could be expected. So that's all.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Randy. Nate, will any part of those cuts be made available to staff prior to final decisions or no?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think because those cuts all impact people, it wouldn't be appropriate to tell us before I told the people who are being cut. You know, it wouldn't be appropriate for us to know that someone was going to lose their job before that person knew. It's really what it comes down to. So I think it will be kept pretty quiet right up until the final decision is made and the people who are directly impacted are informed.
I would also just say thanks to Faye. She and Brianna were staff resources to the committee, and they both did a fantastic job. I don't think that our work could have gone forward without their unique skills and input.
Well, thank you, because I feel like I did I was not as involved this year as I wanted to be. I got sick there at the end and missed all the last meetings where you guys were putting stuff together, but sorry about that. All right. We're a little ahead of schedule, but I see Orion here. So if we go ahead on into governance reports with the Faculty Senate. And Orion, are you now officially president, or when does that switch
as
over?
As of 3 p.m. today.
All right.
So, see, we have a couple of mostly paperwork stuff that we're finishing up this year. So we have it's a fairly extensive revision to the student grade appeals policy. There were a number of sort of malfunctions in that policy that we've certainly cleaned up. But the substance of it is pretty much unchanged, but. So we're clarification on what a day means, the class days. Students are now allowed to have a representative with them at the grade appeals meeting. So let's see. Yeah, new committee memberships. We definitely have a ton of policy stuff to continue next year, but. Trying to make sure things don't break too badly in the budget cuts, I feel like is kind of our, you know, one of the meta things that we're going to have to try and manage. So, yeah, any questions for me?
Just a process question. Do you guys adjourn for the summer and then start back up in September, or what's your schedule?
I believe our first meeting is October, but
okay.
The new Senate will sort of sign in and and then usually it's an extremely short meeting because we don't have an agenda yet and we don't have...
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions for Orion? Okay, well, congratulations on your imminent presidency. So, I don't see Leslie here, and I imagine with finals week two, where she may be busy. We're also a little early. So let's go on into unfinished business. The advocacy committee shared their mentoring interest survey results. I don't know, Jamie, do you want to talk about that at all? Jamie?
Sorry, I don't have
anything
on the phone.
Oh,
no, I don't have any updates at this time.
Okay. All right. I did think those were interesting. It'd be great maybe at your next meeting if you guys could maybe have a plan on sharing this with HR or maybe drafting a resolution asking for something more formal to be set up first.
I believe we shared it with HR. Is that right, Jamie?
I believe we shared with them also. Let me double check.
Great.
It would be definitely good.
I think that's you, Jamie, but
sorry.
We can bear it.
we met with UAF HR and mentioned that we had done the survey and they participated in an advocacy meeting a couple of months ago. So I don't recall the details of that, but there's definitely a different point of view about staff wanting to have mentoring, you know, beyond the first year that a person is employed here at the university, and HR wanting to make sure that that mentoring doesn't, you know, interfere with a supervisor having an opportunity to mentor an employee as they chose, right. And that was surprising to me.
Yeah. Did you have something that you wanted to add, Jessica?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I think that that both perspectives are important and valuable. I think there's probably a way to address both sets of concerns or wants based on how it's structured or proposed. So, that would be a good thing to kind of keep moving on because clearly there's interest. A quick update on the chancellor search. So after the search committee went through all the feedback provided after the forums, we met with the president and sort of just talked through each of the candidates with the president and shared our thoughts on each one. And then the consultant met with the president to discuss. He basically they're called off-list references, so they're not the people that you put on your resume that you know will say nice things about you. They're other people that you've worked with throughout the course of your career or currently. Who will, you know, are not necessarily your advocates, to kind of get a broader view. And so the candidates all gave their permission for those people to be contacted once they made the finalist stage. So most of that was not shared with the committee. It was just shared privately with the president, which was part of the agreement. And so he's been kind of thinking through that and talking with the board, and I expect that we'll hear something maybe even at the end of this week. If not, then certainly in the near term, there should be some sort of announcement. So I haven't heard anything since we had that last meeting with the president, which was almost a month ago now. So looking forward to...
Do we know if there's like an expected start date?
I think sometime before the start of the fiscal year. I think it'll depend also on who is selected. Some of them are not currently employed, are either retired or between positions and might be able to start more quickly. I know Chancellor Powers is hoping to be gone soon, and I think they'll still have to work out either way what the transition is, if there's going to be some overlap, because obviously there's a lot moving right now with strategic pathways and some of these other things where it would be great if we had a little bit of transition time or communication loop fed in there.
Initially, I think they had been saying June 1. Would it surprise you if it was later than that?
It wouldn't surprise me if it were later than that. Just, I think, you know, at that level, people, I think, don't tend to be super nimble in their schedules and able to show up on short notice. So it would be great. I guess it wouldn't surprise me either way. But at this point, I don't think anything would surprise me with it. So just holding tight and waiting. And at this point, you know everything I know. So any questions? Any other questions on that? Any online? All right. Strategic pathways. Nate, did you want to do a quick recap of the forum?
Sure. So I guess it was a couple weeks ago now, or a week and a half, that the president held a governance forum specifically for Staff Council, ASUAF, and Faculty Alliance. The turnout was good. I'd like to thank everybody here that attended the forum. I thought we were represented well. Good, dialogue with the president and questions. Just personally, I would observe that while we received a little bit more detailed information about where Strategic Pathways is at as a project now, I'm not sure that there was a whole lot that I got that was new information. I think that President Johnson is continuing to stress that Strategic Pathways is not yet a plan, and that it's just an idea. I'm not sure if that's the specific language that he used, but I think that that's the concept that, it's clear that he hopes that nobody overreacts to what they imagine as the manifestation, 3 years or 5 years down the line, or sooner. I think that it was good, and I think I've said this before. I think that Jim Johnson is a strong communicator, and I think that his expressed values of transparency and communication, I think, are reflected in these kind of events. I think that there are many, both here at UAF and across the statewide system, that still have anxiety about what goes on outside of public forums, like the one that we had here a week and a half ago. And I think that he's aware of that. It seems clear that those kind of feelings are not lost on him. So, subject matter-wise, I think it's available. I think that presentation is available on the web, so I'd encourage people to take a look at it. There was a little bit more robust, details about what he hoped to achieve. There's been a shift, I would note, in how the idea of Strategic Pathways is being pitched. I think there's much less of a focus on its budgetary effects than there was initially. I think that that's for good reason. It seems like people have questions at this point about how much money it's actually going to save and what effects it's going to have on the university system financially. I think that those are things that are just now beginning to be analyzed. That was one of the focuses of the forum, are the sort of analytical pieces that are going to be conducted throughout the summer and the fall. I think his message to me, the way that I heard it, was to hold our horses and wait for some of that analysis to at least begin to engage this like phase zero plan that he talked about, that's going to be during the summer, that's focused on athletics and what are the other two pieces?
IT and research administration. And so UAF leadership has started meeting to sort of say, it's I guess the intent is to sort of plan the plan for each of those reviews and say from UAF's perspective, here's what we think those reviews or pathways processes should look like for the summer. And so that's something I've just been in the room and sort of in my day job facilitating and note-taking. But I will say that UAF leadership definitely understands the anxiety that's caused by kind of all the uncertainty out there. And that's something they spoke to sort of again and again, is the transparency, the need for really open feedback loops throughout the process, not just at the beginning and the end. Leslie and Melissa, can you hear okay right now? Okay. So Leslie and Jamie, Melissa says she can hear us right now. I guess they can't hear me, actually. Never mind. Would you mind chatting them and saying maybe they should get out and back in? Nicole, would that work if they get out and back in? Okay.
I'm not having any problems here on your line either.
Okay, great. So Nate is going to just send a little note there to the ones who lost sound. Great. Yeah. Thanks.
Yep.
So at any rate, the chancellor will be sort of talking with the president and saying, well, at this point now it's going to be their review process, but let's plan the review process and let's say exactly what we're looking at, who's on the team, who's looking at things. Let's try and get some specifics in terms of the timeline and the processes. And so they're working through that now. And then the thought is as well that phase zero process over the summer will sort of be a way of seeing what works and what works well and, you know, learning from it before moving on to some of the academic programs and schools and colleges and such in the fall. So any questions on that? All right. Staff volunteer day proposal discussion. Okay.
Sure. So I would invite advocacy folks to jump in here whenever you feel you'd like to have something to offer. But I'll just frame it this way, that Volunteer Day, I think it came up in our last month's meeting. It's been under discussion, I think, since then in terms of how to move forward with this sort of more controlled and I think also grassroots kind of development of what Staff Volunteer Day is. I attended the last advocacy meeting and we had a good and lively discussion about that, and there's been a lot of good ideas floated about how specifically to move forward immediately. We also brought it up with the Chancellor and Corey Burrell at pre-staff, and I think that they were very receptive to some of the ideas that the committee and other staff council people had. Basically, the idea is this, that, you know, as a committee, advocacy has expressed eager willingness to organize and to plan a day beginning in the near future, I think either in the very short term, after the term concludes, or maybe more ideally in the fall, when a few projects, organizations around interior communities, campus communities, can accommodate additional volunteers on a large scale. And that staff would be encouraged, anyone who's interested, to sort of coalesce around these organizations once they're identified in these projects, to kind of convene a large scale volunteer effort, and then, you know, that reflects well on us. Obviously, it reflects well on the university, and it's volunteer time that many of us would be engaging with anyway, and it's just sort of organizing it on a larger scale. Bill, did you want to add anything?
Oh, thank you, Nate. And so we're going to have just more discussions, but you know, I think we're going to try and frame a proposal to do an event in the fall. And while we haven't picked a time frame, you know, we're considering near the Thanksgiving week or during Thanksgiving week, but before Thanksgiving weekend. And so we're going to, if you're interested or have some ideas, you know, please participate in the advocacy council so that we can, you know, make progress on this activity.
Yeah, I think great. That timeline makes a lot of sense, and Thanksgiving is a nice symbolic time to do that as well.
I would observe that when we brought it up to Kari and the chancellor pre-staff, I think that there's a lot of energy, and I think that there's a lot of excitement about it. I think that you know, they've mentioned to us in the past, and I think that they brought it up again. You know, having an option in addition to sort of external groups and organizations around Fairbanks and other sort of campus communities. I think they are hoping that we can also include like an on-campus option for volunteering, like a cleanup day, I think, is something that they talked about in our last meeting. And so figuring that sort of balance out, I think, is important too.
All right. Statewide transformation team update. So the president met with the statewide staff a couple of weeks ago to kind of talk through some of the initial bits, and I believe that's the initial plan is out there on the statewide transformation team website now with some of the outcomes. So one that I know is moving right now is UAFHR has picked up a lot of the HR duties for statewide, leaving statewide HR to be more of a broader policy level operation, although there's still some PPA type duties happening at statewide. Which also reminds me that there hasn't been an announcement, but it is official that we have a new Chief Human Resources Officer, Kelly Height McGee. Am I saying that right? And so I think the search committee was very excited about her and very, very happy that we were able to get her on board.
That was Kelly McGee?
Yeah. And so that's something to sort of watch. Obviously, one of the biggest questions with the transformation team has been, how does that impact strategic pathways, especially if we're doing strategic pathways of administrative functions as well. And so that'll be something that's interesting to see as well with the phase zero when they're talking about IT, for example, where statewide transformation team had a lot of IT recommendations as well, and then how will that inform the strategic pathways process. Any additions from the half statewide staff in the room that you want to add or comment?
You covered it. So that's that's my knowledge.
Okay. The telework regulation that we reviewed was approved, so we do now have telework regulations in place at the university. So that's attached to the final version, and thank you guys for the feedback that was provided. Committee representatives, we do actually need, there's finally now going to be an employee engagement subcommittee. That we've been kind of waiting for this for, I don't know, 6 months now. I'm not sure how long it's even been. Yes, Gina, yay. So we were asked to provide between 3 and 6 people from staff council to serve on this committee. I know I had maybe 1 or 2 people who had already sort of expressed interest, but Leslie, I think you signed up for it. A couple other people did too, but I'm sure I don't have 6. So I would say now, anybody who's interested in serving on this, just go ahead and let me know right now. And I know that we're brought another one for Blackford today. Yes, Carrie Sotoro. Okay. So anyone who wants to be on that committee, Leslie and Christina. Leslie, I'm assuming you still want to be on the committee.
Oh, actually, I think she's talking about the one that's on
SharePoint. Well, I don't think we did that. No. Well, this will be a good one. Okay, so I've got Leslie, Jamie, Christina, and I know I also have Carrie Santoro, so I can take two others, or we can be good with four. Jane, did you want to not? No? Okay, that's fine. Yeah, Kara, that'd be great. Five. All right, anybody else? All right, so we were asked to nominate, so I'll send those names forward. I'm not 100% clear on the process, whether they take everyone we nominate or we basically just got a memo saying nominate 3 to 6 people. So that's what I'll be doing, and Faculty Senate was also asked to nominate 3 to 6 people. So we'll put those names forward, and hopefully you guys will be contacted somewhat soon. They're trying to get the committee formed and get it moving, but they don't have a real locked in stone timeline yet.
Yeah, maybe the fall.
It might not be till the fall, but they wanted to get the team committed and get it formed so that they could at least know who they were trying to schedule and reach out to. Mm-hmm. And it will depend on your availability. So. Yeah, that's what I have. Great. Thank you, guys. Yeah.
So whose committee is this? Is this the Chancellor's committee? Is this an HR committee?
So this, there was the group that was originally tasked to do the employee engagement, which was chaired by HR and marketing, basically shared it. And so I believe that the memo asking for us to nominate people came from the Chancellor, but I think it was written by Carla Browning and sort of sent on that group's behalf by the Chancellor. So I think it will formally be a Chancellor's type committee, but I think it will be steered by Carla Browning and Brad Loveland is my initial assessment. Does that? Whenever I talk about HR things now, I'm going to stare at Jessica and see if she wants to correct me. So. Yeah. And I don't think that the charge isn't super clear for that committee yet either. So it's still a little vague, but I think they just wanted to get a group sort of formally together and get working on that. So, all right. Well, we are now up to the officer election. We're running way ahead of schedule.
Hey, yeah, I'm going to ask you a question about the employee engagement. Did they ever release the survey results, like, publicly?
They released the summarized survey results. They didn't release them, like, down to each department level. They shared those with the heads of the departments, basically. And then it was basically if you're in a department that has fewer than 10 people, they wouldn't share those results with anyone. They would only share kind of groups larger than 10, because the thought was, you know, if there's 3 people in your department, like mine, or office at least, it'd be very clear who's who, and then it wouldn't be anonymous anymore.
Right.
So they shared the broad ones with everyone, which I thought were pretty interesting, and I'm not sure if those are posted online. If you're interested in seeing them, if you can't find them online, let me know and I'll see if I can find them in my email from when they shared them. They were pretty interesting. I think some of the big takeaways were people felt very engaged with their coworkers and their sort of direct supervisors, very kind of committed to the mission. There was not trust or connection to leadership, really, at the university. That was sort of the strongest takeaway, was really feeling like the top leadership just wasn't connecting or necessarily in touch. So I know that group was sort of tasked with starting to figure out ways to better engage with their people as well. So, okay, and it is posted online. If you just go to, okay, it's on the Human Resources website, and then Employee Engagement is a menu bar option, and then that'll take you to the Employee Engagement page with the results.
Thank you.
So actually, right before we dive into officer election, there's one other thing that I realized I should have had on the agenda and didn't. So in the cornerstone message that went out last week about staff development day and registration, sort of buried underneath that was a piece about the Leading in the 21st Century series that the president is putting on. And so there's information there about applying. They extended the application date to May 3rd. So if you're interested, you can apply by tomorrow. And supervisors and leadership are also encouraged to nominate people for the process. But it was extended because there weren't a ton of people in the mix already. So I'd encourage you if you're interested. They'll take 2 dozen employees from UAS. You have to be able to commit to 9 full days, which is 3 days for each module. And I think the dates are in that email as well. The training's in Fairbanks. You'll need your supervisor to approve you to be out for that time, basically, because you won't be doing any other work. And this is sponsored by the president, and it's actually something that Staff Alliance at the beginning of President Johnson's term had said, we really want more leadership training available to kind of, we're having a lot of turnover, we're having a lot of people having to take on new roles and responsibilities, and we haven't done a great job of providing training to people and how to step into that role. So it's something we asked for, so I'm glad to see it moving. And so just a heads up, check your email and check that cornerstone message, and it has information on how to apply there. Or if you're a supervisor, consider nominating someone as well. All right. So with that, are we ready for the election? Brandy, are we ready for the election? All right. So I will turn this over to you then. Go through who.
Maybe I was here.
It might ask if there's any other nominations at this point.
Who then left? But more
right after.
I feel like I may be right.
So why don't we take a short 5-minute break right now, and then we'll vote and then have another short break. So reminder, there's coffee and cookies and tea and water.
Is everyone back? I guess if not, they're not here to say no, but I don't see any name tags for people. Okay. So first we're going to do presidential elections. So we're going to do the same thing that we did last year, which is we're just going to have a write-in vote, and I'm going to tally them up on the spot. And then after that's done, we'll take another super quick break, and then we'll do vice president votes. So the nominations for staff council president for AY or FY 2016-17 is Faith Alant, our current staff council president, and Nate Bauer, our current staff council vice president. Do either of you guys have personal statements that you would like to say?
Sure. So I just wanted to thank people for nominating me again. It's been a real honor to serve as your president for the last year, and it's an honor to be considered again. I think, in the last year, we've managed to do some pretty important things. To get the leave share changes put in, and to sort of raise the voice and profile of staff governance at UAS, with now serving on Chancellor's cabinet as well. And I think, I've been able to form some good relationships with leadership as well that I think we could capitalize on the next year, especially having served on the Chancellor Search Committee. So I'm very happy to be nominated and to consider serving for the next year. It's been one of the best things I've ever done at UAF. But I also, don't want to hog it either. So I'll say if I am elected, this would probably I would not run again for another year because it's an amazing opportunity that I think many people should have. So, that's all. Thanks.
I have 4 points that I would like to make.
Okay.
The first one is that I'm thankful for the nomination. I accepted the nomination because I think it's a mark of first of all, I think if there's somebody out there that nominates me and that I think that I'm willing and able to do a good job, I'm not going to turn it down. But also, I think it's a mark of a healthy organization to have contested election, to have turnover. I think to broaden engagement across a wider spectrum of people, and so I think that those are all important things. My second and third points are just that I hope and I assume that people here recognize how lucky we've been to have Faye as our president, and for a few different reasons. Firstly, it's kind of a generic one, to have somebody who, an OMB person, at this stage in the university's sort of development is really ideal. I mean, to have somebody that with expertise and sort of daily experience in the kind of things that are very important to staff council and our constituents being successful. And third, speaking to Faye as an individual, I think that she's really strong and complex as a thinker and as a communicator, and the number of people I've sort of lost count over time of the number of people who I introduce myself to and mention staff council, and immediately they recognize Faye as being our leader and have tons and tons of compliments for our organization. And many of those are conflated with compliments for Faye, and so I think that she's represented our organization really well. I feel like I'm campaigning for Faye, but I would be fine to do that. That would be appropriate. And then the fourth point, I think Faye addressed it, is consistency. You know, a year is not a long time, and as she pointed out, we've spent the last 8 to 12 months working hard to communicate and build relationships with a lot of people who we depend on for these strong and friendly relationships, and those are relationships that we use to make conditions and circumstances better for ourselves and our constituents and the university as a whole. And so I think consistency is important. That's sort of the flip side of turnover and vibrancy and energy as an organization, is to have folks who are strong leaders across the organization who have had the chance to build and strengthen those kind of relationships and experience. So I would be eager and happy to do a great job as president, but I think that it's a choice that there's not really a bad choice.
All right, thank you. Before we vote, does anyone have any nominations that they would like to make on the floor? Online? Does anyone online want to shoot me an email? Or are y'all good?
We need a Trump. There's no Trump. Does anybody want to act as Trump? The insurgents. Yeah.
Okay, so people online, can you please email me your votes while I collect the ones in the room? Thank you.
Nate Trump.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So if you turn in your vote, there's a short break where we should probably just stay in the room while they tally votes, and then be ready to go for the next set. Chris, I'm a little insulted that I only married an Ivanka. Yeah, Jamie and Christina, it's email to Brandy, but Nicole's checking her email too. So if you sent it to Nicole, you're set.
Job. Am I going to be able to pay for my shelter and my food? And the rest
of So Brandy's gotten them from Wendy Roop, Brad Crick, Chris Brooks, and one other person. And let's see, and Jamie just sent it. So Chris, you're set. And she got Leslie's. And then Christina.
I mean, I do, but I think
so Evelyn and Melissa Park, I think your vote haven't gone through yet. Christina, we got you. They got your vote from Nicole, so you're set.
My dog.
Okay. Thanks, Melissa. Thanks, Evelyn.
Yeah. And
I want to change the rules for now, and we feel like we can share that conversation with the community. But I'm concerned that everybody's time comes
from me. I just on the same side.
Evelyn, we're ready to announce the results. Okay, can you guys online hear me? Yes, they can.
We work.
I had one of the masters once asked me if I had any spring break plans, and I was like, well, I'm going to be working.
Okay, everyone, the new staff council president is Faye.
Yay!
Thank you, everybody. Okay, so before we do vice president, does anyone online or on the floor have nominations that they want to make?
So maybe we'll say who's currently nominated.
Yes, currently who's nominated is Nate Bauer for a second term and Trish Winters. Okay, so I have a personal statement from Trish to read because she couldn't be with us today. All right, she says, I'm grateful for the collaborative participatory action of staff council. Although we don't always get the exact outcomes we'd like in every situation, I don't see any other employee representative body that does, and I feel ours functions in a much less contentious way. I have been so impressed by the amazing personal qualities of our staff members and feel our representatives do an excellent job of portraying that. Like so many other things that run smoothly in the background, staff does not always receive recognition for its jobs well done, but everyone continues to produce excellent work regardless. I'm proud to be a part of this body and would be happy to serve as the vice president if the council chooses. Nate, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Just a couple things. So the first thing is, as a disclaimer, Trish is fantastic, and she's been a really, really strong representative, and she would be an excellent choice. I'll say a couple things in my favor, just because I'm being honest. I do think that consistency is important, and sometimes I envy faculty senate, not often, but sometimes, because they do have sort of built in 2-year terms, and I think that there are some things that you can accomplish over the span of 2 years that you just can't within, you know, half that time. And so the second year, I think, is when you can capitalize on some of those relationships that you work to build for the first time initially. And then sort of selfishly, I really enjoy being vice president and serving as an officer for staff council. A lot of the things that Trish said, I would echo those. This is a strong and energetic body. I enjoy working with, in particular, our committee chairs. I think that we have a really, really strong and energetic group of committee chairs at the moment. I would like to think that Faye and I have had something to do with getting people in those positions that are really do a good job for their committees and for staff council as a whole, but I can't really claim credit for it, I don't think. But the point is just that I enjoy working with those folks, and it would make me a little bit sad not to have the chance to anymore. Yeah, that's all. Thanks for the nomination.
Can everyone online please email me?
Because you don't want it to be
arduous for them to
at the same time, like, with one company have with another company, but they have very few required people, so we can't do
it.
There's no leads from that, you know? They're offering some introductory pricing. They're definitely less expensive than
if you go to any of them.
It's better than nothing. But it's all going to depend on how many leads they generate.
Okay.
If we don't generate any leads,
if you don't get rid
of them, true. Yeah, we get.
So if you see this opportunity, it's not sure
it used to be that we had a job, but we being president
But then with them, I'm sure
they towards kind of this different product than it was when we first started working with them. It seems like a good idea, but it's not always a good idea. Definitely one of those things where they're trying to create a product that's great for business. Who you are.
Okay, so I've got all the votes. The new staff council vice president is Nate for another term. Yay!
Thanks, everybody. Happy New Year.
Leadership continues.
All right, so we need to ratify the officer election. So attachment 271/1 is the draft motion 2016-271-1 to ratify the election results. Do I have a motion and a second?
No motion.
Second, okay. And this does not require a roll call vote, right? Okay. Any opposed?
Thank you.
All right. Seeing none, the motion passes. All right. Staff achievements and highlights. And a score that came in advance. There were two staff members received Alaska Press Club Awards. And these are kind of awards of merit that are conducted by journalists from outside of Alaska who judge for the Alaska Press Club. So Jeff Richardson, who's a public information officer in marketing and communications, took first place for best health reporting with his story, Road to Solving Alaska's Alcohol Problem Filled with Roadblock Challenges. And Diana Campbell, the public relations assistant and event coordinator for the Geophysical Institute, took second place for best culture reporting with her story, Finding Home and Heritage in the Berry Patch. We also had two staff who are the 2016 UA Staff Emerita, and emeritus status is the highest honor that a former staff member can receive. You become eligible after retirement. The first of the staff emeriti are Richard Machida, retired from OIT and longtime staff council member. I'm not sure total how many years Richard was with staff council, but it was before anyone else, you know, before anyone can remember, really, who did great work as well on our elections committee and was sort of responsible single-handedly for our database for many years. So congratulations to Richard. And Libby Eddy, who retired last year as the registrar of UAF, who'd also been with UAF for many, many years, including starting back in the 80s and was here during the last big budget crunch. And Libby was also a member of the PIT crew, the Process Improvement Group, before she retired. So really thrilled that we have two such great staff emeriti this year. And then also the 2016 UA Staff Make Student Count, the UAF winner, was Carolyn Chafin, who's an undergraduate academic advising coordinator for the College of Natural Sciences and Mathematics. And she received that award at the last Board of Regents meeting down in Anchorage and had breakfast with the chancellors and the president when she received her award. Any other staff achievements and highlights to share today? All right. So with that, right on time, we'll go to the Chancellor's remarks.
Great. Thank you, Fred.
And thank you, Chancellor Powers, for the refreshments this morning.
Oh, good.
We really
good.
Appreciate it.
Good. We were talking on Friday with Susan and Debu and said, well, spring we should do a pig roast or do something. And it was just too late. I said, well, maybe some cookie jar cookies would take a moment. So anyway, next time we'll do something bigger. First of all, who do we have online?
So we have Evelyn Pensgard, Chad Olson, Leslie Walls, Jamie Warwick, Wendy Roop, Chris Brooks, Bradley Crick, Christina Thompson, and Melissa Parks.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Real quickly, and I don't want to be repetitive, but chapter search for candidates visited, of course, late March, early April, a week ago at President Johnson's town hall meeting. He had mentioned it'd be a week or two at the earliest, so coming up on 2 weeks, I think, this Thursday, so hopefully we'll hear something. I have not heard anything. I will be talking with him tomorrow. I may get some more information then. Couple disruptions on campus relative to facilities. Last Thursday, the tube in one of the boilers cracked, created a potentially quite a dangerous situation. Excellent response. The plant is up, switched to a GVA while the plant was shut down. Excellent, as I mentioned, response going through some after incident planning right now. Other issues, the water connection to college utilities is turned on and the UAF water treatment plant is off. It'll take some continued testing, but that transition is well underway. Of course, legislative issues, again, you may have hit this. Still looking at 207 dead, 209 dead, and then the performance scholarship at SB 174, currently in House Finance. I know Steve Thompson's been called out of town on the emergency medicine or emergency situation, family issue, and we're at somewhat at risk with Representative Thompson out, so we'll see what happens there. I don't know if he's back in Juneau at the moment or not. Received a very early report from Ian Olson on recruitment and enrollment and retention, and for the moment, and it's very early, and until students come through the door, we really don't know where we'll be, but the numbers appear strong, down 1%, but again, for the fall, but still very early. Other issues, hearing quite a bit on strategic pathways. President Johnson has talked essentially about a phase zero, and athletics will be considered this summer, and we're putting the teams together right now to review that, and hopefully that would be used as a template learning experience, as well as some kind of decision that could be then used for other programs, in particular the more complicated academic programs going forward. Title IX, visits to Kotzebue, Bethel, and Nome over the last month and a half, Mae Marsh and Kevin Caladrera and I attended Steve Getz to Bethel last week instead of May because of a health issue. But anyway, excellent meetings on the rural campuses, clearly a call for community. While here the Title IX focus has been largely campus in the smaller rural communities, great engagement from public safety advocacy groups, school districts, et cetera. And so we'll look to move the continued Title IX planning as part of a community-wide effort. In fact, in Kotzebue, the local branch manager testified, came forward during a lunch meeting and said, we have funds to help build some of these programs, build the community, and I have never seen anything quite like that before. So anyway, some good support from the community. Other issues, good news, there's been some discussions about parking and thinking about these kiosks and what happens next winter when it's 40 below and people are keyed up. We've signed a contract to pay with a phone app, and so that will be rolled out here and tested through the summer, but it appears to be a very slick, easy phone app to pay for parking. An alumni event this past weekend meeting. A lot of good things happening with the alumni. There are chapters being established in Seattle, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. Membership in the UAF Alumni Association is up 23% over this past year. One-third of all philanthropic giving now comes from the alumni. And what was a $9.6 million target this year, we're at $6.1 million, but a lot of great effort and energy by the Alumni Association and Emily Dragas. And then two other issues. One is I've been working with CTC and the College of Rural Development, and essentially we're going through a bit of a restructuring where there'll be, instead of an executive dean and a CTC dean essentially reporting through that arm, two deans, one for the rural areas, one for CTC, two dean, two college model is what it's referred to as. Day-long, been a number of work sessions since October. Dana Thomas led a big part of this as he put together the history of this relationship over the years. And last Friday, the group met again, laid out a plan going forward this next year on specifics under that model. And it's while not transformative, it certainly appears to be a very good step on our improving communications and providing some autonomy for both sides of the equation, so to speak. And then just commencements, obviously a very busy week. Today is Bethel, Thursday is Nome, Friday is Kotzebue, Sunday, of course, Fairbanks. Then next week, Wednesday, Sunday, Tuesday, Fort Yukon, Dillingham, and Tok in that respective order. Any questions?
I have a question. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Two quick questions, Lee. One percent down the earlier, that fall enrollment?
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing is on that, the parking kiosk?
Yes.
Where would it be located? I'm sorry, I'm not on Fairbanks
campus. So for the Fairbanks campus, there's a lot of concern about the kiosk as a way of addressing some of the parking issues and problems anticipated in cold weather. And so we've moved to a phone application. That's just for the UAF campus. And so you essentially can pay online. Your car is then registered in the parking spot. The police would have access to that software, and they'd know exactly who's on time or who's up to date with that payment or not.
And maybe Amanda can just confirm, this is only on the Fairbanks campus, is that correct?
That is correct. It should hopefully be available for all parking on campus, not just the meters. I think it's going to be received really well, and that a lot of people will want to utilize that instead of getting out of their vehicle and having many.
Okay. And the chancellor mentioned commencement, which just reminded me I had an email over the weekend from marketing communications. They still need volunteers for commencement here in Fairbanks on Sunday, as well as a few volunteers for the kind of practice or rehearsal on Saturday. On Sunday, they'd need people from 12 till roughly 4, but there are shorter assignments. So if people are interested in volunteering, if you could let me know today, and I'll send those names on as well. Do you have something to
add? I just had a question for the chancellor. You mentioned that the switchover to college utilities for the water supply that's been completed.
Underway.
Oh, it's underway. Do you know when that is anticipated to be finished?
My notes.
So I think what's happened is they made the switch and turned it on, but the water goes into a big kind of holding tank. So right now the college utilities water is mixed with what was left of the campus water, so it'll take a while to sort of work it through the system. But we have switched.
They turned it on like April 5th, so I mean it's been a while. I've noticed in residence life there's been a huge difference in the water, and I've already seen the water be much clearer than what it was previously. So I think it is getting to the system, especially our buildings are high use because there's showers and things like that. So the water is in the residence hall. So.
Great.
Okay, I have a question about the parking. The now the app is a replacement for the kiosk or is it an addition to the kiosk?
Yeah, it's another option. Right now, we replace the kiosk, or we're replacing the meters with the one kiosk, but it's really not sufficient. We elected to just buy one kiosk because they're very expensive and kind of pilot it. But then we started exploring the app option, and so it's an additional.
Okay. And another question on the athletics. I don't know how far-reaching the cuts would go in athletics, but assuming that something happened and it did get there was a cut going to be made, obviously the positions in the athletics would disappear as staff positions. My question is, even though we're not a student body, what happens to the students that have a sports scholarship?
Presumably those would be held. The early discussions, so you have to honor those. Take care of the students.
Right. I'm sure some of them might want to go somewhere else, but some of them, that's what they were using to go to college, you know. Yeah. So and yeah. where they're not looking at a pro career or something. They just were going to play here so they could go to school.
Right.
So, okay.
So I know at our last meeting there had been questions about the number of layoff and non-renewal notices, and I saw there was an update from Kari as right. well on that. If you want to just close that loop, did you want to say? Or
no, I don't have those numbers with me.
I have them okay. on the meeting too. But so yeah, in pre-staff we had asked the chancellor and Kari for an update on those layoff notices that we'd asked about at the last meeting. And so 36 layoff notices have gone out and 15 non-renewal notices for term employees. And so those are the notices that have gone out. Those people haven't ended work yet, and so they could still be recalled. And then there will probably be additional ones pending, depending on the final budget. We don't know where that is yet. So, thanks. Just wanted to make sure we have that update. Any other questions for the Chancellor? Yeah.
Chancellor Powers. So in regards to the recruitment and being down 1%, is that within the target that they had anticipated? Because I recall that, you know, as the number of prospects, you know, high school graduation rate or the number of, you know, graduates each year, you know, differs across the state. Was that in line with their projections?
It is, but it's, again, I'll just have to emphasize, it's early, but it's at least encouraging that we're hanging that close. We do anticipate the next 3 years to be lower years, just simply high school demographics.
Okay. And then the second question, as the president announced strategic pathways and he identified areas of investment, you know, one area that he didn't mention was, you know, things like recruitment. So as there's a, you know, a decrease in travel available across the university system, you know, will an area of investment such as recruiting be made, at least at the UAF campus?
There will be reductions related to advertising. It's a lively point of conversation right now, just because it's such an important economic driver. So, a lot of focus on key targets, and of course that's the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and then South Central, and the Pacific Northwest. But there'll certainly be less than the full net thrown to the wider area in Lower 48.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions online for the Chancellor? All right, well, thank you again. And we'll, I hope, see you at our June meeting, at the beginning of June
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Okay, great. Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right, new business. We have two motions from membership and rules. The motion to move computer science from Unit 10, which is College of Natural Science and Mathematics in the Museum, to Unit 3, which includes College of Engineering and Mines, which is where computer science now lives. And then the second motion is to place all the university and student advancement departments in Unit 7 and to rename Unit 7 University and Student Advancement. So is there someone from Membership and Rules who would like to present these?
Yeah. So Trisha asked me to do that. And so, like they had already mentioned, it's pretty much just housekeeping. There's not anything fundamental when the university restructured. This is just catching up to that restructuring and kind of putting people where they should be when it comes to our staff council units and aligning the names. Specifically within the second, the USA naming, there is one group that's in Unit 7 that's not necessarily in University Student Advancement, and that's, I suppose, upward bound. But we contacted them, and they were not objective or didn't voice objection to be under the unit that's called University Student Advancement, because we're not calling it the Division of, it's just that's the name of it, and they are part of a advancing team for the university, so it makes sense that they wouldn't be upset about that.
So did anybody have any specific questions about those two motions? Sorry, I'm still trying to get down through the agenda to the actual motions.
Sure. So it's page 45 and 46 of the agenda, for those of you looking for the written ones. We had a potentially a record number of attachments on this one. Thanks for wading through. All right, so since this came out of committee, we do not need a second. So if there are no questions, then we'll do a roll call vote or not.
I have a
question. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I know we talked about it the other week. I just want to confirm one more time that these changes will still actively represent the member seats, but actively represent the unit or department, correct?
Yes, so there will be shifts in seats, but they won't. Neither of these will take effect until the next election cycle. So within the committee, specifically within Unit 7 and 9, because there's kind of a big shift there, we're hoping that where the chips fall, nobody will be displaced. But we don't know that until the next election cycle and who decides to continue being on staff council and who decides to kind of continue being, whatever happens there. So the committee kind of decided to wait until we get close to make these changes because they need to be made to actually accurately represent how our unit system works. And then as we get closer, if there is a representative that's displaced, meaning they are part of Unit 9, but now there's not enough seats, that we would consider other options, such as a special seat or, whatever else. So we're hoping that it all just works out. But the committee is very aware of that.
One quick clarification. I think the one to move computer science, it does say that it's effective immediately. And I think that's because currently we do have a representative who is in computer science, but she's an at-large representative.
Right.
And so it can be effective immediately without actually changing where any current representative sit.
Exactly. Yeah. So exactly. The computer science one is immediate, but the other Unit 7 one isn't effective until the next regular election for odd number of units.
Great.
For that reason.
All right. Any other questions? Okay, Nicole tells me we do not need a roll call vote. So I can say, is there any opposition to draft motion 2016-271-2, motion to move computer science from Unit 10 to Unit 3? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Is there any opposition to draft motion 2016-271-3, motion to place all university and student advancement departments in Unit 7 and to rename Unit 7 University and Student Advancement? All right, hearing none, the motion passes. So thanks again to membership and rules for cranking through those. You guys have got an awful lot done this year, and we really appreciate it. So next up, UAS Emergency Action Plan Policy Review. So we do have attachment 271-9 is back to it. The draft policy on the Emergency Action Plan. And do we have a feedback timeline on this, Nicole? We don't have a timeline, so I'll give us a timeline of before our next meeting. So we'll introduce it now, and then okay. But he should be here for anything. We think he'll be here tomorrow. Okay. We'll take this month to review and provide feedback. So please take a look, and then any feedback you have, you can just send to me and Nate, and we'll compile. And then if it looks like the feedback is of a level that we should do a motion either in support or recommending changes, we can do that as well at our next meeting. So.
Question: is this a brand new policy or is it replacing an old one?
I believe this is a new policy. Yeah. We've had, having to have each individual department had to have a policy. And this one is requiring actually one per building, which makes sort of a lot more sense than having a single policy for people who are spread out. For example, SBOS, what Chris would have to do at Luna Point during an emergency would be very different than what Wendy would have to do on Westridge. So it's setting those out. Yeah. And it references some of the current policies out there related to this. I know there also Cabinet saw a sort of overall emergency. What was the title on that? An overall university-wide emergency action plan. That the goal of that is really to set forth, if we had a major emergency and it knocked out the chancellor, and then who would be in command? It basically set forward the whole command structure in case of a major emergency, and if we had to barricade campus, how would we go about that? And sort of very extreme disaster or active shooter type scenarios. Who would call it an emergency, and how would we, how would we deal with that? So they, that was done, actually put together by the UAF Fire Department, and they had a student intern basically putting that together from having done a lot of research on other plans out there and so forth. And so that was shared with Cabinet. They're working on trying to get something out, and then we'll update as needed. But the goal for that plan is not that every individual staff and faculty member will be familiar with it. It's really just setting forth so that, the leadership knows who's making the decisions when these things happen.
Where is the staff council president on the chain of command?
I'm not in the chain of command. It goes through core cabinet, so it goes through the vice chancellors, basically. And I think if every vice chancellor is knocked out, then I think at that point maybe the fire chief. I can't remember exactly, but they only go through five levels of command. Unfortunately, my coup will have to wait. At any rate, that's moving as well. So, please review this policy and then just let us know any feedback you have on it. The next one is a little more controversial. So, statewide HR shared with Staff Alliance these proposed revisions to the university regulation on employee furlough, basically stripping out the governance review piece, which was almost all that was left of what governance had worked with them to put into the furlough policy in the first place. And their thought was, based on how furlough is probably going to be used, which is at a kind of department by department level, it would be weird for governance to be involved before the department people were, and it would be weird for governance to be involved at each and every each and every departmental piece. I don't necessarily need to see that. But I think, though, that where we should be involved is if there's going to be a furlough before the president says, yes, I'm approving use of furlough at any number of departments, that governance is looped in, because that's based on our role in policy, is that we're the representatives of staff on issues that impact staff working environment and compensation and all these other pieces. So we are at Staff Alliance. There's a memo providing that feedback, and I've sort of expressed my personal, as Staff Alliance chair, a perspective on that to the president directly. And then Nate and I also discussed it in pre-staff with Mike and Kari, some of our concerns. you know, to me, to be perfectly blunt, if they make that change and just kind of take that out, I don't know why we were asked to be involved in the furlough policy draft in the first place, because basically everything that we had to say will have been removed kind of afterwards, which I think is a bad precedent and a bad process. So hopefully, though, we can sort of clarify what it should be. And I was out sick at the Staff Alliance meeting where Artis Lynch, who is the interim Chief Human Resources Officer, presented. I don't know, Nate, if you wanted to comment on it or kind of share her perspective.
I just think, you know, some of it I think is results from honest misunderstanding, or at least a discrepancy in terms of how we understand the process versus the way that artists and perhaps even the president understands the process. You know, I think that when the way that Artis Lynch reflected it to Staff Alliance, it seems as though their thinking is that their furlough decisions happen on a more granular level than I think that the way that we assume that process will happen. I think that perhaps the president, or at least his resources, imagine a scenario in which he announces furloughs at a more granular level than across the system or across a particular university. In which case, it would perhaps not be appropriate for any of the governance groups to sign off or be aware of those. I mean, if President Johnson is making decisions about whether a furlough is approved at a department level, that would conceivably involve understanding who, as individuals, are receiving furloughs, in which case staff counsel has no interest in receiving that information or processing that information before the employees receive it or process it themselves. But that's not when this furlough policy was designed and defined. It was like 2 or 3 years ago. The understanding of that process was at a higher level in the sense that furlough decisions, the decisions to approve or deny the use of furloughs, happened not at the department level, and perhaps not even at a VC component level, but at like a chancellor level or a system level, in which case it would seem very appropriate, and it was Staff Alliance's thinking at the time that governance groups would be made aware of those kind of decisions, again, at the university level, at the campus level, or at the university level, because it seems like Staff Council, Staff Alliance should be aware that these kind of decisions are being made. And again, it just seems like there might be a misunderstanding or a difference in understanding about what that process is going to look like over the next year or 2 years at this point. And I think that that's some of the work that Staff Alliance is doing to clarify at this point.
Great. And I just realized that actually we didn't get that attached, so apologies there. We will email it out. And I think also it is posted on the it's on the Staff Council website. I think you linked to it. Okay. It's on the Staff Alliance website for sure. And we'll get the – okay. Okay. And then we'll make sure to get that to you. So that's, anyway, Staff Alliance should be responding soon to try and at least preserve the original intent and spirit. And if it's just a matter of clarifying, then hopefully we could do that in a way that doesn't feel like we've just, yeah.
Yeah, I have a hopefully brief question about mechanics of furloughs. I know when they came up last year, a lot of the conversation was related to how much choice and decision would be available to the employee and working with their supervisor about how they took their furloughs, like whether it would be like one mandated chunk, or whether it would be like you could spread it out over a period of time if that's what you wanted to do and your supervisor was able to work with you on that. Is that still pretty undefined as far as the regulations?
Yeah, it's not defined in the regulations, so I think it is a sort of department by department basis in conversation with your supervisor. So for example, I know in my office we're planning on a furlough for this year, and we're small enough that we've had those conversations, and so we were offered, you know, if you want to do voluntarily a reduced contract, you know, that would count towards any furlough, you could do that, and then if you, you know, if we do a furlough of 5 days, what would that look like? You know, would you want to take it in a block, or would you want to spread it out? And I said, oh, I'd want to spread that sucker out like as thin as I could, but you know, and in my office, at least, we sort of all had our own way that we would want to apply that if we did. So I think at that level, it's still ideally will be as flexible as possible. It's just, I think that now that we're looking at applying the regulation, it is looking right now like the way it's written, the president would have to apply each individual department furlough, which having President Johnson approve a furlough for the Office of Management and Budget is a little in the weeds for his role, maybe. Yeah.
I would be worried that he would get bogged down by those kind of requests, like that there would be many of them, and so he would just like approve.
Yeah. I mean, to me, if he's approving, to me, his role should be, I approve the use of a furlough up to X days to be determined on an as-needed basis by the departments. You know, where he just says it's okay for departments to use a furlough this year. I think, to me, that's where his role should be. And then the departments or the vice chancellors or whatever level figures it out. I have heard, though, that it sounds like UAS and UAA are probably not looking at a furlough this year. Their budget circumstances are just a lot different than ours. For example, UAA relies a lot less heavily on state general funds than we do because they have so many students, they bring in a lot more tuition. So their budget gap is a lot smaller than ours. UAS also has a smaller budget gap than we do this year. So right now, from the sound of it, UAS will probably, and maybe statewide, will be the kind of the first staff groups to be looking into furlough. So at any rate, I think probably it's, you know, it's planned in some areas. I'm assuming the president will approve, and it's more a question of, all right, process-wise, where is he? What level is he approving, and at what level should governance be consulted? Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments on that? Okay. Thank you. All right. So there's also now proposed revisions to the regulation on sick leave and types of employment. And so these two are sort of related. And so this is back when they were looking at kind of changing some of the employment definitions, I don't know, 6 months ago, roughly, maybe a year ago, where they were looking at temporary employees and extended temporary employees and, you know, when do you qualify, and then what does that mean in terms of what you get? And at the time, we had said, well, extended temporary employees should get sick leave. You know, if they're going to be here that much, and then we don't want people coming in sick and getting everyone else sick. And that change went in. I think part of the...
Page 13.
Yeah, sorry. And part of the issue now, after it being in place for a while...
of course.
Yeah. So they added on page, on the first page there, they added this look back. So extended temporary employees who do not work 30 hours or more during a look back period will not continue to accrue sick leave. So you need to be working at least 30 hours a week to continue earning sick leave. But you do retain any that you've accrued until they have a break in service of at least 10 working days. And then on the types of employment, the next page, the definition was have qualified for health coverage. The second point of defining an extended temp employee. It used to include have qualified for health coverage during the most recent look-back period, and they were that piece was sort of based on this assumption that if people qualified for health insurance during that look-back period, they would take it and they would want it, and that was then to be used in kind of pulling the numbers. But it turned out that most of the extended temporary employees who qualified for health insurance declined it. They didn't want it. Presumably they had it through another source. So this was sort of a piece that was in there based on an assumption that people would take it. They're not taking it, so it no longer makes sense to be used as a criteria, is how ARDIP explained it to us. Do you have anything to add to that? So those are the two pretty succinct changes. So this is one where if you reading this has, if it raises any red flags or if you have any concerns or if things kind of occur to you about it, please let me know, because at my first read it seems fairly innocuous and straightforward. But there might be nuances to that I'm just not aware of, not having ever been an extended temp or working, in an office with where that's common. So do you know, Nicole, what our deadline for feedback on this was? Thank you. Just a second.
This is the sick leave on May 25th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I need to do that.
Could you send me an email saying please? Thank you. So on the sick leave and the types of employment, our feedback from governance is May 25th is that it's due. And since that would be going really through staff alliance, I'd appreciate it if you had any comments on that or concerns about it to me by May 20th. So it gives me just a little bit of time to at least share it by email with staff alliance if needed. All right, any questions there?
Apologies if I missed this. When would you like feedback about the furlough?
We had a short timeline on that where I have to respond to ARDIP by Friday. So if you have anything on the furlough changes, if you could have that to me by tomorrow, I'll try and get it incorporated.
And you'll send out those suggested furlough changes via email?
Yes, and it's also posted on the Staff Alliance website as well.
Okay, I didn't see it there, but it's easy to miss on that site.
Yeah, sorry. Nicole will send that out.
And then just a note, I know we've talked about this before at the governance level, but changes to regulation without enough time for governance to really respond. I think this is an excellent example of something where I imagine if they want to change this quickly, they're looking at next fiscal year and get notice out to them ways particularly. But this really is something that we need to have more time to respond on, and it's not appropriate to have staff who are going to potentially be affected and have a day or two to look at something and then get feedback.
Yeah.
And I think, for major changes, it's especially important, but for any change, I think there should be some understanding that we need a good chunk of time.
Yeah. So part of that on the furlough one is my fault, actually. I was out sick for a couple of weeks and did not check my mail or do anything except lie in bed dying. So some of that is on me. I think also the timeline on this in part is Ardith Lynch is stepping down and retiring with the new CHRO coming in. And so there is sort of this, I think she was trying to get a bunch of stuff wrapped up before she was out the door. But I do think our initial memo that's due this Friday could say, here are our initial concerns. Also, more time would be good. Because I think, even accounting for the fact that I was out, it was a short timeline for something like this. That was initially supposed to be a very collaborative process. So. And Chris, I see your bit. I'll get to that as soon as we're through the new business piece. So the Meritorious Service Award, Jeannie discussed that during public comment, so the link is right there. And then we mentioned there's a new number H. So when Nate and I were discussing Staff Volunteer Day with Kari and Chancellor Powers during pre-staff, Chancellor Powers also started asking about things like, you know, employee giving and United Way and some of these campaigns and this sense of, you know, it's sort of this awkward place where these are still really important things, but asking employees to give money when the people are worried about their jobs or about being furloughed or all these other things is also hard. And, you know, is it appropriate? Is it respectful? And so he was just sort of kind of thinking through some of that, but, you know, also saying, well, you know, it's also a really good way to show the impact of our employees in the community when we, you know, we say we have this much employee giving around the United Way campaign and this much. And so he was hoping that staff council might be able to take on putting together a report on employee giving and volunteerism that UAF employees engage in, and to kind of compile that. That's something that then we could use for advocacy in the community and with the legislature and so forth to say, you know, when you're talking about the people at the university, it's not just a paycheck. This is money that then people were giving and were involved in and were participating in the community and were volunteering, we're doing all these things. And so there would be sort of a two-phase report. The first would be starting by compiling, you know, what we currently know about what's being done. So that could be, you know, talking to the United Way people and maybe the Heart Walk people and some of the other initiatives that are currently out there and seeing what they've got for levels, and then maybe looking at a few other ways to collect information on volunteerism. And then after that's done, sort of looking at making recommendations if there's ways that we could sort of better harness that, or if it's just we just want to communicate it more, or, you know, we think we should do fewer things through the university asking for it, or, you know, just whatever recommendations come out of that. So Nate and I thought that might be something that the University Advocacy Committee could sort of start looking at, and we'd be happy to help think through sort of how to get to some of that information, because it's probably not just all sitting out there readily available right now, but could be kind of an important advocacy tool. So thoughts? Advocacy? Sorry to spring this on you guys in a meeting. It just came up. So.
But that's good. That sounds really, you know, good to, you know, inventory where the organization is at, and then, you know, in the long term, by having like a volunteer day, we're trying to find an avenue to help employees who haven't already contributed in the community in some way to, you know, reach out and help them participate in those processes, at least in my opinion. So, you know, absolutely understanding where, you know, we're covering the bases with our employees already. That, yeah, employees should be individuals and able to make contributions irrespective of their employer as well, right? So it's, you don't want to take credit for some employee's effort if, you know, they do that as their self. But absolutely the motivation to do this is, again, to increase the participation in our community by demonstrating what we can do, I guess.
Well, and I think that's a good point that it, you know, it could be used to inform Volunteer Day as well, and so it's not, I don't want to, like, throw a big distraction at you guys, because Volunteer Day is a big project already, but, yeah, I think it relates, and it's interesting. So if you guys want to start thinking about it, and then if you need more people to be involved to work on that, we can send out, you know, if, whether it's a subcommittee or whatever else, and try and rally a few more people to help with that.
Agreed.
Great. All right. Thank you. All right. So, Chris, you had a question about layoffs.
Yes, ma'am. This Okay. I guess what's a little confusing to me, and I really want to make sure this is correct. You're kind of like, you know, university-wide, and you have individual schools and departments, whatever, who have their own...
Oh, no, you don't have to be laid off after all, if the person hasn't left, basically. So, you know, what they don't track is people who are told you'll probably be laid off and then the person quits and finds something else. That wouldn't be tracked if they left. And then Kari also mentioned, yeah, this is the ones that have gone out. So there are also probably some that have not gone out that could go out depending on where the final budget numbers are. And the timeline for that really depends on the legislature, so we don't have a firm timeline with that right now.
Okay, so basically we can see a 300 more come out within the next month.
We could. I think that's not super likely at that level, but we could see more come out. I think, you know, a lot of these are based... The best case budget gap for UAF right now is $26 million, and the worst case is more like $36 million. So you can sort of, if we're managing that gap through with layoffs, there would be more that would come out, but probably not substantially more. That's my initial assessment from budget size things, but I don't know what each area is planning, so...
Okay, well, I'll let us move on, but I guess within the communication with staff, one staff, including myself up until recently, believed that the numbers that President Johnson was giving out was what was actually going to happen. So, you know, 400 or 500, you know.
Yeah, so those are positions impacted, 400 or 500, that he gave out. And a position could be impacted by a furlough or by a reduced contract as well. So those numbers are really, really high. And then there's also vacancies that we don't fill. So, for example, at UAF, in a normal year, we have 300 positions turnover. And so if you don't fill half of those, that's 150 fewer, you know, fewer positions, but nobody's been laid off. So
yeah,
there's a lot of kind of different pieces that factor into those numbers.
Yeah, I totally follow that. I've been reading up on it as well. But the perception is what I'm talking about. It might not leave those numbers, you know. And so there's that uncertainty where it means that we're going to have 500 or 600 people laid off through the university. So this is quite a bit of a different number, you know, even with the public. So that's all I wanted to point out.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's something where there's leadership gets used to a certain set of vocabulary. So if we say we have fewer positions, that doesn't mean layoffs unless they say X number of layoffs. But people read it and see fewer positions and assume it means layoffs. But there are a lot of ways to get fewer positions without layoffs.
I would also observe that this is sort of, as a communications person, this is kind of a problem of audience. And I think mm-hmm. that it's probably in the president's best interest to... reflect a very high number, especially if his most urgent and immediate audience is the state legislature. I think that the budget problem for the university is a very big one, and I think that it's in the regents and the president's university leaders' best interest to reflect how big that problem is for us. So, I think you're right, Chris, that when you're considering the audience of the people that actually work at the university, it's not in the president's best interest to reflect the changes and the budget problems as bigger than they are. And I think that's what he risks when he throws out a number like 500. I think you're right.
All right, so I'm going to move us along because now we are... behind schedule, and I don't want to keep us too late. So, internal committee reports. And for the internal committee reports, I think most of you have reports attached, so feel free to reference those as well. And just, you know, if you have anything to add beyond the written report, then share that. Elections?
Yeah,
Okay. People online, Brandy said, just reference the report. Thanks. Membership and roles?
So we have attached our April meeting agenda or minutes, which was a brief meeting. Everybody was pretty busy in April and mostly just getting done with what we proposed today and was approved, as well as our year annual report. And you can see all the different things we achieved this year. And that's page 52 and 53. And that's all we have.
Thank you. Rural Affairs?
Rural Affairs Committee met just to go over a couple of the business updates. We are still looking at our two-week schedule to get in with leadership in the CSPD. The known fiber access, we got an update from Mr. Chad Olson there. This is looking really promising. You can see in our handouts, there's a little map there that shows the fiber routes in the skirt over the exit points. Okay,
we can hear you fine, Chris.
Okay. And also, we touched on a known Title IX visit by Ms. Marsh and Chancellor Powers and some of the community reactions to that. And we'll probably keep looking on into that in the future. We will have a annual report out. That was my fault. I didn't understand that that's due for this one. We'll put that out sometime in the next couple of weeks. Next meeting is Wednesday, May 11th at 2 o'clock. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Staff Affairs?
So we do not have a report attached. We discussed a number of the ongoing topics that we've been covering, staff morale. The communication subcommittee started talking about our goals as well. But we don't really have too much to add today to the forum. So if you have any questions, let myself or Samara know. Thanks so much.
All right. And university advocacy.
So I didn't get a written report in, but during today's meeting, definitely, you know, the volunteerism is really the highest on the radar. And if you're interested in helping us, you know, move that agenda forward, we have a meeting in May, and I don't recall the date. Nicole knows.
I think it's on the website.
Okay. All right, great.
Yeah, great. Thank you. All right. Chancellor's Cornerstone Award Committee, they met and are done with their work. Correct. So thank you to those of you who serve on the committee. That's one of my favorite committees that we get to have, so I hope that you enjoyed working on it this year. External statewide committee reports. We have attachments on the staff health care committee and joint health care committee. Leslie, did you have anything to add verbally? Meeting this Friday, open enrollment is underway. Thank you. And thanks for sharing that report as well. That's helpful. Compensation Working Group, Brad, I saw you submitted a report. Do you have anything to add verbally?
Yes, I just wanted to note the group that there have been a couple of questions at the UAF grapevine about sick leave and whether or not sick leave stayed out and you are laid off for the position. And just a general reminder to all staff that sick leave is not paid out. It's not owned by the employee the way your annual leave is. And the grapevine has a better explanation of that, but it sounds like there's some staff who maybe are confused or concerned that they should get their sick leave and wouldn't.
Well, thank you for that clarification. Yeah, it's good for people to know that. And then morale committee, I don't think they've met So I'll keep working with Morgan. I know they've been trying to get something scheduled and actually see that happen. All right. Anything else from any of the external committee reports? We've covered most of those. I see Brad attached the master planning committee report. All right. Thank you for that. So with that, we can go off the record and have our roundtable discussion.